I like the purple. I think they're purple. The blinds are the.
No, it's just like very, very sunny. They're black and white, but I
Oh.
don't know. The color on my webcam always looks weird because my hair always looks purple too. I don't
It
know.
does, yeah.
I don't
You
know.
should dye it purple.
I did have purple hair at one point. Now I have green. Might do blue next. I'm living my teenage dirtbag years now.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now for something completely different.
Everybody's gonna die. Come watch TV.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure.
Change the channel, Marge!
TV makes sense. It has structure, logic, rules.
Welcome to TV Makes Sense, the podcast that looks back at great episodes of television while not giving a damn about our bad reputations. In fact, we'd probably settle for having any level of reputation whatsoever. But here we are. I am your co-host, Matt, and I'm joined, as always, with my fellow co-hosts.
I'm Sam.
And I am Gus.
And today, we are back. Sorry for the delay. We've had several scheduling conflicts, but we are recording today. This episode and the next episode should be on the regular schedule. I can't make any promises beyond that. But we're coming in with a great episode today. One of the TV series that gets put on several lists of canceled too early, never given the recognition. We're talking the great series, Freaks and Geeks, specifically the first episode, titled Pilot.
Groundbreaking.
It's a classic.
Mm-hmm. Pilot for your first episode? Groundbreaking.
Yeah, so very excited to talk Freaks and Geeks. Just a little housekeeping at the start. I was excited. We almost got our first email.
Oh, really?
Instead, it was just some live feedback from my sister who sent me over Facebook Messenger. She let us know how she got into Scrubs all those years ago. It's something I mentioned in the last episode, that if she could remember to write it and let us know. She said basically a friend of hers, when she went to university, she would have started university, I guess, that year, a couple years older than me. She had a friend who was a big fan of the show, and she said, coincidentally, or ironically, he is now a doctor himself. I told her to send that story to comedynightpodcast@gmail.com, but she refused. Thanks.
Forget
anyway,
the friend to write in, because I want to know, like, how I've heard that it's kind of one of the better medical drama shows in terms of, like, what it actually is like to be a doctor, so I'd like to hear from a doctor.
All right, so Marley, forward that episode along to your doctor. if you still talk to him, we'd be excited to hear from him.
I know the healthcare industry is pretty dire straits right now, but I'm sure he'll have time to talk about this.
Oh yeah, yeah, I can't be busy at all, right?
No.
I myself, I have been. I guess I was getting into it. I got into like season two after having not watched any episodes up until that point. And then just kind of been distracted mostly by Freaks and Geeks and plenty of other TV shows. But yeah, I liked what I had seen so far. I'd seen a couple episodes with Brendan Fraser. This first one where he gets the board or the nail to his hand and then mm-hmm. finds out he had leukemia or whatever he got.
Mm-hmm.
So
oof.
Adequately warned about how heavy the show gets at times, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I was enjoying it, especially Dr. Cox, just because he's like nothing at all what I was expecting that character to be like. So yeah.
How far along are you, Matt?
I was into season two because we were season one, like, not that we'd skip the intro anyways, but it was always singing along, and then season two they slightly changed the theme song, so it was a bit longer. So I haven't seen enough episodes that I got the new rhythm down yet, but it was enough to realize something's changed.
I think that might just be just a season two thing. I think it goes back to normal.
It goes back. Actually, I was listening to the podcast with Turk and JD.
Oh, yeah.
So I was listening to, I listened to the first and second episode, and what they said, because they go on all these tangents, what they said is that in season two, they changed the theme song, and then people wrote in and complained, like, why did you guys do that? And then they switched it back to the original because of that, because they wanted to add the janitor in, and people were like, nope. So they changed it back.
Oh, is he not the original? I guess not.
No.
Yeah. Well, speaking of shows with theme songs that you should never skip, and also that weirdly have, well, we'll get into who's sitting around in the opening credits to Freaks and Geeks, but the focus of today's episode, the seminal series Freaks and Geeks. I don't know if I use the word seminal right. I just thought it sounded like the right word. The
sounds good to me.
The cult classic,
yes.
Freaks and Geeks. Fucking love those opening credits. I'm pretty sure the first time I watched the show, like, Bad Reputation ended up on a lot of playlists after that. And I've been watching them on DVD. Shrek. So
Shrek. It's notably in Shrek.
I was watching something else the other day, too. I mean, it shows up in a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great song. But yeah, definitely, like, I get super into it every single time. So I guess we'll start with, since this was Gus's pick, we'll start with Sam. Now, you've heard of Freaks and Geeks, but you had never seen an episode before?
No. So I think I first heard of it, like, just cruising the Ask Reddit. And like you said, like, typical, what show ended too early, or like, and it always said Freaks and Geeks, Firefly, and then some other, like, cult classic shows. But I decided to only watch this episode and, like, go into this cold so that I can have kind of an outsider's perspective on it. And you guys will kind of know what happens later on. So, but I'm very, very excited to finish watching it. I liked it a lot.
I watched Undeclared, and when it aired, I remember it actually being on. And we can get to the link between the two series in a minute, but I think, like, I had heard about Freak, like, maybe in, like, magazines and stuff like that, like, this series, I don't know, maybe on the internet, in the early versions of the internet, I don't know. I missed it, but I was aware of what it was, and then I think I watched it when I was in university. I really don't remember. That was kind of the one time I binged it. It used to be on, it was on Netflix or something a long time ago. And I think I watched the first couple episodes and never really got back into it. But then, yeah, I got the DVDs a couple weeks ago when we talked about doing this episode. And so first time I've re-binged the series. Found out yesterday, I don't know where it streams in the US, but if you do live in Canada, the series was recently added to CBC Gem. So as I was rewatching it for another time today, the first episode, if you don't mind watching six ads, the same six ads every 10 minutes, you can find it on CBC Gem. Weird, because other than Seth Rogen, there's nothing Canadian about the show whatsoever, but that's cool. Gus, I mean, this was your pick. How did you first get into Freaks and Geeks, and how much you're rewatching it now?
I think I got into it because of a friend. She recommended it. And at the time, I think I was either in high school or getting out of it in my early 20s. And the show was great. I love the characters. And you can just relate to what they're going through, the growing pains. And there's a lot of emotion in the show, even in the first episode. So, yeah, I can empathize with the characters, and I loved it.
So
it's a great show, and rewatching it it's been a while since I've rewatched it. And rewatching it again, I remember just how I felt for the first time watching the show. And it was, yeah, it was great. Very nostalgic rewatching it again.
So, like, overall, you know, I don't have a whole lot of nostalgia for high school, but like, where, you know, looking at that and relating to the characters, like, you know, there's definitely moments in this one I relate to, but like, where were you, a freak? Were you a geek? Were you somewhere in between? Like, where did you land?
Definitely a geek is where I landed. Mm-hmm. So I related more towards Sam and that little group a lot more.
There's a lot about Sam I certainly can relate to. I was a geek. I was never a rebellious teenager. I've been, you know, rebellious mid-30s, which is what we've all just been talking about before we got on the line. I guess Sam, that's where did you land in high school?
I was like definitely a floater. I think I set up camp in both parties. I think I had my rebellious friends, and then I identify more as a geek than a freak, but I definitely can see. I think there's good people on both sides.
Yeah.
I think you'll find that's the theme of the series. We're, you know, we're more than just freaks or geeks. We're jocks, or I guess they don't really show others. Hufflepuffs. I don't know. But yeah, it's my high school was kind of weird. We definitely had, like, I don't know, the geeks and freaks were all kind of the same kids. There's a lot of kids who hung out in the art room and played Magic cards, and then there was like a whole other group of people that just like didn't want to sit in the cafeteria and didn't pay attention to them playing Magic cards and just hung out instead. That was my crowd. Oh, that's sad. So looking back, I kind of mentioned it earlier, but kind of getting into this via Undeclared. Undeclared was a series that came out a few years after this, made by Judd Apatow, who's pretty big name in Hollywood these days. But back then, you know, went back and like kind of looked at how his career got started. He really only had his, you know, became a big name when 40-Year-Old Virgin came out. But he had been a writer for a long time. Ben Stiller Show, Larry Sanders, The Critic. Apparently also did uncredited rewrites on The Cable Guy, Happy Gilmore, The Wedding Singer, Liar Liar, and Bruce Almighty. Oh. So I think he was just like, you know, hanging around, like Hollywood knew who he was, but not necessarily anyone else. But he had a deal at DreamWorks, which basically just meant he could, you know, create a retainer. And he knew Paul Feig, who had been working through an actor through the 90s. So he was in, actually Judd Apatow also wrote Heavyweights.
I love that.
Ben Stiller, and who else is in Heavyweights? Mm-hmm.
He's such a dick in that movie.
He's basically like proto white girl in that movie. But yeah, so Paul Feig had this idea, and basically Judd Apatow helped them develop the pilot. They sold it to NBC, and that's kind of where it came along. Like, Apatow was our producer, and, you know, we can get into the casting here for a minute, but Judd Apatow, when he went on to make Undeclared, he wanted to bring a lot of the cast along with him, but, you know, it aired on Fox instead, and they only basically approved Seth Rogen for a full-time spot on that show. And then with some of the other, like Jason Segel, Busy Phillips, and Natasha Melnick, who plays Cindy Sanders, the cheerleader that Sam's in love with, all got some guest spots. And then, you know, a lot of characters are like one-offs on that show. But, you know, have either you seen Undeclared?
No.
No?
That might be my next one when I'm done.
Yeah, it's two seasons of it. When I finished Freaks and Geeks, I just looked up to see what else has been made that seems similar to that. And yeah, someone told me Undeclared.
Yeah.
And it's a great show.
Yeah. It's definitely more of a straight sitcom than like a comedy drama like this. Yeah, it stars Jay Baruchel, which back then I knew him from Popular Mechanics for Kids. and then, yeah, Seth Rogen, the guy from Sons of Anarchy, Charlie Hunnam. Except he plays like, he's nothing like Jax. He's like a British like theater kid.
Oh my God.
To the point where I could never watch Sons of Anarchy because I'm like, man, that's the guy from Undeclared. But anyway, yeah, it was also super funny.
So, series. Like, canonically, in the movie This Is the End, Freaks and Geeks would be where James Franco and Seth Rogen know each other, and Undeclared would be where Seth Rogen and Jay Baruchel, I know that they knew each other before that, but that would be like their connection.
Yeah,
and like I watched that recently, so
yeah, because Jason Segel is in as well. This, I can't even remember how the line goes, but it's one of my like, it's like, because he's making fun of his, playing Marshall, and he's like, you know, I'm just sick of it. You know, it's like, he'd be like, hey, who ate all the cake? And I come out like, where's all the cake?
Movie reference.
is anyone else? I'm sure Martin Starr is going to be in this in the end.
Yeah.
I think he's one of the ones that falls in the pit. David Krumholtz shows up later in the series as Neil's older brother.
I'm excited to see like all of the guest stars, because like even just in the main cast, it's exciting, like knowing where these people all go. This is them as babies.
Yeah, I mean, let's say
a lot of those guys came out in what I was just gonna say. A lot of them, if not most of them, started coming out when Jude Apatow started getting big in those movies, you know. Similar feel, I guess, Pineapple Express and Zack and Miri Make a Porno. And
I haven't seen that in a while. Yeah, so like just going through, and I think that's probably how the show still has a reputation, just because of you watch the opening credits and like all these people became so much more famous.
Yeah.
So just top to bottom, Linda Cardellini plays Lindsay Weir. And the really interesting thing too is how young they all were. Actually, she was probably one of the oldest of the main cast. She was 23. But Freaks and Geeks is her breakout. She played Velma in Scooby-Doo. 6 seasons on ER, which is kind of where I think I first knew her from. Forget that she was on Mad Men. Apparently she won an Emmy, or was nominated for an Emmy. But like Bloodline, which I've not watched the rest of. I think I only watched the first season of that. Dead to Me, I think I only watched the first season of that. Playing Laura Barton. I don't know if you guys seen Hawkeye, but they're implicating something about her. I have no idea. Apparently, she actually went on to date Jason Segel for 5 years, something I did not know.
For me, she's always going to be Chutney from Legally Blonde. She did not take a shower because her perm was still intact, and she did not deactivate the ammonium thiclocolite.
Yes.
Jesus,
that's right. That she plays that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
It's all coming together. So late. Side note: Legally Blonde, is that like one of your 5 Desert Island movies, Sam?
Oh yeah. No shame.
Jim would not approve.
I know. Kay would not approve of any of my movies. My other one would be Mean Girls, and I noticed that Mean Girls was definitely inspired by Freaks and Geeks. Parts of it are very much like Linda Carlini's character. She's like, she wants to kind of hang out with the cool kids, but she's like a mathlete, and she has to like hide how smart she is, which is exactly like the main character, Katie Heron, in Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Interesting thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to my TED Talk.
Essay, I will.
Well, speaking of Mean Girls, one person I know in that movie, Lizzie Kaplan. Kind of blinking, you miss her, but she is in this episode as well. She plays Sarah. She shows up a few more times, but this is her first IMDb credit.
And who is Sarah? Because I definitely missed it.
When Eli is asking the two girls outside to go to the homecoming dance, she's one of the two girls. She has a bit, she shows up a bit more, especially in the finale. Okay. She has a pretty big role in that episode. But yeah, Linda Cardellini has not aged in the last 22 years either.
Yeah.
But who
has? She looks good.
Yeah. But someone who definitely aged is John Francis Daly, who played Sam Weir. He was actually only 14, one of the youngest cast members. I don't know if they casted someone so young so he would just look so much more tiny than everyone else and really play it up. But yeah, he was in, played Sweets on Bones. Definitely more of a, he acted for a while, but he co-wrote Horrible Bosses, The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, that terrible Jim Carrey and Steve Carell movie. He wrote Spider-Man Homecoming and that weird John Cena movie.
Yeah.
And he wrote Vacation Friends, that weird movie with John Cena, and wrote and directed The Vacation Reboot and directed Game Night from 2018. So, yeah, he's
That was a good movie, too.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
Dude, this is great. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll play Jeopardy one day, but Trivia Night. But this is great. This is. Yeah.
I know him from the movie Waiting, because as a veteran of the restaurant business, it's like very cathartic to watch Waiting because they're all like assholes.
Yeah.
Wow.
The whole game about showing everyone your penis.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm just like standing there, just like not understanding. Why do you play this game? Well, again, by then he must have grown like 2 feet taller, because like he's towers over Ryan Reynolds, doesn't he?
Yeah,
he's just this tall, like I rewatched Vacation last week, and man, that movie is so good. It had Ed Helms. There's a reboot. Like he plays grown up Rusty, taking his own kids. Trying to take them to Wally World. Oh, it's great. It's got like Christina Applegate plays his wife. One of the kids from Santa Clarita Diet plays their kid. Charlie Day's in it. Caitlin Olsen's in it. Just trying to think about all the other cameos. Anyway, really, really funny, especially for something that's a reboot. This guy. So anyway, yeah, John Francis Daly has an impressive resume. Continuing, I realize that the credits are actually just in alphabetical order. So James Franco played Daniel Desario. He was 21 at the time. This was basically his breakout. And then he went on to play James Dean in 2001 in a made-for-TV movie, and then Harry Osborn in 2002 Spider-Man. Another Spider-Man's going to keep coming up here.
All roads lead back to Spider-Man.
Yeah. For some reason on this podcast, seems like all roads lead to James Franco, which somehow made the news this week because he's going to play Fidel Castro in a movie. And terrible casting choice.
Is it going to be funny?
I don't think so.
How do we make that funny?
I hope not.
Yeah. What?
I don't know if it's as insane of a conspiracy theory in the U.S., but some people here in Canada believe our current Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, is Fidel Castro's love child.
Yeah.
What? Really?
Yep.
Well,
funny. What? What's the theory behind that?
Well, so Trudeau's father was Pierre Elliott Trudeau, who was Prime Minister for like the 70s and most of the 80s. Either he was good friends or his mother was good friends with Fidel Castro, because they had basically still communicating just as like a fuck you to the U.S. And so yeah, so there's just, and they'll put pictures side by side and they just kind of look the same. He does kind of look like Fidel Castro.
I can't remember what her first name is, but like Trudeau's wife, it was like fully an arranged marriage, like, and she's like 20 years younger than him. It was like a societal arranged marriage, and so she, I mean, people claim that she kind of like didn't actually love Pierre Trudeau, and
I'm looking at a picture of Pierre, and he is is Fog Lee.
Yep.
I still think he got around though. I think there's the definitely power. Some quotes from back in the day, and I think it's mostly around, like, you know, the beginning of, I guess, like gay rights in Canada and things like that. And it's like the government should, like, as Prime Minister said, the government should stay out of the nation's bedrooms. Specifically, yeah. Yeah, so anyway, we'll see if Franco ever does play Castro. I can't imagine that's gonna last much longer. So going down to the next, Sam Levine played Neil Schweiber. He was 17 at the time. I would say he's probably one of the least known of the cast, just, and that's no discredit to him. But he's got 122 credits on IMDb. I know him from something vibe. I think the first thing I remember him from is he cameoed on Undeclared as the leader of a frat house. They're all trying to get it. My wife said she recognized him from Veronica Mars. So yeah, he's been around. Arguably the most famous person to come out of Freaks and Geeks, Seth Rogen, played Ken Miller. He was 17 at the time as well. So he's actually more the age of the geeks rather than the freaks. But this is basically his first thing. He was a 16-year-old stand-up in Vancouver and then went to an open casting call. But he went on, like I said, Judd Apatow cast him in Undeclared. He's in Donnie Darko, an episode of Dawson's Creek. But then roles started drying up, and apparently he didn't really care because he wanted to work on being a writer. And if you ever heard him talking about Superbad, he wrote it as a teenager. So, like, he was probably writing Superbad at this time, right? So, but yeah, I would say, other than the fact that Franco has been nominated for some awards, like, I would say Seth Rogen, probably the most successful cast member, who almost, you know, also led North Korea to at least hack Sony Pictures. Yeah, something you see it a bit in this episode, but you know, we'll loop back around to when you've seen more of it, Sam, but he's surprisingly not in the show all that much. I don't know if you've been, how many of the episodes you've watched, Gus, but like, he doesn't get a plot line till like the last three episodes.
Yeah, towards the end. He's just kind of adds jokes and humor and one-liners.
Like, he's not even in some of the episodes. Like, it's very, not that it's like, his character is definitely not typical Seth Rogen. He plays, as you can see in this episode, he's a big asshole. And, you know, we can't, I don't think we can go an episode around here without bringing up magic mushrooms.
I would go, but I have a prior engagement. My cousin just sent me a bunch of mushrooms and I'm going to eat them.
His voice also has not changed in the last. Yeah. And then we have Jason Segel, who plays Nick Andopoulos. He was 19 at the time. He had a few roles, but basically Freaks and Geeks was his breakout. And really, it was probably How I Met Your Mother when he kind of hit the mainstream. He had a great recurring role on Undeclared as a jealous boyfriend from high school. Just fucking psychotic. Whereas you look at this character a lot, you just kind of see Marshall. You know, he's broken that mold a few times. Martin Starr plays Bill Haverchuck. He was 17. He had a few small roles. This was his breakout. I actually had a lot of this prepped when we were talking after the last recording that we might talk about Silicon Valley's optimal tip-to-tip efficiency episode. And I was super excited because I was like, I want to talk about Martin Starr because this guy does not get his due. And then I didn't really think, like, when you said Freaks and Geeks, I was like, yeah, all right. And I was like, oh, fuck, man, he's in this too. Like, I'm so going to talk about him. And something I found out is, like, I wanted to talk about it because he's, like, the kind of guy who's just, like, why is he not more famous? Like, he's great and everything. McGilfoyle on Silicon Valley, Party Down, which also is Lizzie Kaplan in it. Anyone else from Freaks and Geeks in that? I don't think so. You know, shows up on Community as Professor Kligoris, or Kligoris, either pronunciation is fine. one of the funniest characters and knocked up with his beard. When they're doing the bet, but he has to grow his beard and hair for the whole year. And like, was it Lanko? Was it hard for you when you had to change your name from Cat Stevens to Yusuf Islam? And then, you know, because I said we're going to be talking Spider-Man a lot. He was in the Edward Norton Incredible Hulk, and then he was recast as Peter Parker's teacher in the latest Spider-Man trilogy. Apparently now they're just like, yeah, no, same character. He was going to university in Incredible Hulk, and now he's no longer just computer nerd. It's kind of like how I think in Iron Man 2, Iron Man saves a kid. He's like wearing an Iron Man mask, and they've gone back and like, yeah, no, that's Peter Parker.
And yeah. There's also Alfre Woodward or Woodard plays like a mom of like a casualty from one of the Avengers fights or something. And then she was like fully in, I think, Luke Cage or one of the Marvel shows. She was like a main character. And they're like, can't explain that one away.
Yeah, I think by the time Luke Cage came out, they were like not pretending anymore that they were actually related. Anyway, I found I guess it was a retrospective on Freaks and Geeks. It was like a 20-year retrospective or something. And I think part of the reason he maybe has this perception of like Martin Starr, that is, not being like super well known. Apparently after Freaks and Geeks ended, he just like was getting nowhere and had ended up firing his manager just because his career wasn't going anywhere, and he quit acting. And I guess he only came back after they offered him the role and Knocked Up, and then that led to him getting Party Down and then basically revived his career. So yeah, he had given up. So anyway, good to see him getting work. Is also, yeah, Guilfoyle on Silicon Valley is
yeah,
also amazing.
He's certainly a type, so I mean there's always gonna be roles for that type of person.
It's weird seeing him here with like such short hair and those fucking glasses, man. It's just I guess the other two that are in the opening credits are Mr. and Mrs. Weir. Becky Ann Baker plays Jean Weir. She's got credits. I don't really recognize her from anywhere else. But apparently, because on her IMDb, her known for is Men in Black. She's like the pregnant alien that gives birth to the squid baby.
Ooh.
Like, not even, she just screams. And like, anyway, that's her. She was also apparently in Spider-Man 3. You just got to keep going with this at this point. And apparently she's married to Dylan Baker, who played Kirk Connors in the original trilogy, who would have been the villain in Spider-Man 4 if we were allowed to have nice things. And then Joe Flaherty, again, another trend here, talking about actors who were on SCTV, came up with Dave Thomas a few months ago talking Arrested Development, but he plays Harold Weir. I think he's probably most well known for calling Happy Gilmore a jackass. And he's also the guy who delivers Marty McFly the letter from 1885, Back to the Future 2. But yeah, he was super famous from SCTV. Had a vampire character named Count Floyd, who kind of was like, you know, those guys who like host those late night horror things. And he's like milked that character for years in all sorts of ads. So he's definitely like the veteran talent here on the show. Weirdly, and I've been able to understand this, that Busy Phillips isn't in the opening credits, even though she is way more in the series than definitely Seth Rogen. But she's as Kim Kelly. She was 20 years old at the time. Yes, basically where she got her start. And then she went on to go on to Dawson's Creek after Freaks ended, and has basically been working continuously since then, including on Cougar Town.
Six seasons in a movie.
And then, yeah, so there's a lot of like, it's funny. So like the main cast is definitely all unknowns. But as I was looking through the credits of a lot of these side characters, they definitely went to some more established child actors. Chauncey Leopardi, which is a fantastic
Chauncey.
Name. Chauncey. He plays the bully Alan, who was 19. He was 19 at the time. He appeared as about half the series. Hard to recognize him without the glasses, but he played Squints in Sandlot. The kid who fakes getting drowning so he can get mouth to mouth in the lifeguard. Sarah Hagen plays Millie Kettner. Actually, she wasn't in a whole lot. Ben Foster, who plays Eli, he was only 19. He only appears in a couple episodes, but he was in. I remember watching this one as a kid. Flash forward, he was on that for like 3 years before this, and then he's had a pretty successful career since then. Probably the only person who plays a teenager in this show who is not a teenager is Ron Lester, who plays the Seidelman in Gym Class. He was Billy Bob in Varsity Blues. And then he was 29 at the time. He also played the parody of Billy Bob, Reggie Ray, in Not Another Teen Movie. And then he went under gastric bypass surgery and then never got roles after that. And then sadly died in 2016 from kidney failure.
Cool.
Sean Weiss plays Sean, who's talking to Eli on the benches. I remember him as Goldberg from the Mighty Ducks movies. And then Colin, you kind of think might actually become a bigger character. He's the kid who gets in the fight alongside with Bill and Neil. He only actually played in 3 episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't recognize him, but he was actually quite an established. He had like dozens of credits before this. And then the only other cameo, because I've already talked about Back to the Future, Coach Fredericks, played by Tom Wilson of Biff or Griff or Mad Dog Tannen fame. Which I feel like they cast him just to, you know, it's like, who's a good bully? Let's get Biff. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's just in the first episode, there's tons of people who show up. Like young baby versions of them show up as the series goes on. Rashida Jones is in an episode later on.
Oh, can't wait.
You mentioned the guy from Numbers, David Krumholtz. I guess he was a child actor in the Santa Claus, so he was known. So yeah, so there's a lot over the next 18 episodes. A lot of people show up. So that being said, that was fun trip through IMDb. Let's get to the episode itself. So I mean, Gus, you wanted to talk Freaks and Geeks. Why specifically did you choose the pilot?
Well, it was between that and the finale, but once I finished watching it, I figured the pilot is perfect. It introduces most of the characters, including side characters as well, and the dynamic that you're going to get between the characters, and it kind of stays the same, that the relationships that they have, but you can see the growth from it. So I think it's a great episode. The first episode is great. It's a great introduction.
Oh yeah. It's a super tight pilot. And like Samuel sees you go on, like basically not really much of a change in tone from here on out. Like, they definitely, not a whole lot of change in 18 episodes, but they had their idea pretty dialed in from the start. It's a good, very good starting point. I mean, you can probably watch actually something interesting with the show is they showed a lot of it out of order, and like 3 of the episodes didn't even air on the original run. They were only ever seen when the show went into like reruns on Fox Family or something a year later. So, and there is some storylines that carry on through the series without spoiling too much, but there's some things I think you could probably jump around a little bit. But yeah, it's a great episode, and I think it kind of something I noticed kind of rewatching the pilot again today after having just watched the whole series again is, kind of explaining why Lindsay is now deciding to hang out with the freaks instead of her mathlete friends. which is something they less, you know, they question less and less going on. But yeah, there's definitely like kind of a pretty deep moment when it was like, oh yeah, I was the only person in the room when grandma died.
There's a lot of morbid, I don't know, the whole Weir family's quite morbid, from the dad being like, so this person, and then they died.
You know, which is like, I had a friend that used to smoke. You know what he's doing now? He's dead.
He's going to grab all of them, but he does it like four times.
Yeah. Which is another like thing. I was like, oh, that's like, there's like a joke like that in Mean Girls too. It's like, you will have sex and you'll get herpes and you'll die. But then, yeah. Poor Lindsay.
It reminded me a lot of, actually, it's the old Adam Sandler routine. It's actually, I think they're parodying Carrie. And like they're asking, it's like, hey, mom, can we go out? And it's just, no, they're all going to laugh at you. It's definitely a lot of, these guys worked a lot with Adam Sandler in the 90s. So definitely a very similar vibe in comedy. It's funny, though, it never really comes up much more, I guess, about their grandmother and that kind of being Lindsay's trigger. There is some episodes later on where she talks a bit more about trying to be good, and then that her grandmother doesn't see anything, so she just kind of like basically no longer believes in God anymore because her grandmother didn't see anything. So that, I mean, they kind of use that a little bit, but there's less super depressing moments. I mean, there's some for sure, but it definitely does get a little dark at times. But yeah, that was something. I did notice that army jacket she rocks through the entire series. If you wanted to go as an obscure character for Halloween, just get an oversized army jacket. anyone could be Lindsay Weir. Or I guess guys, you could, you know, be Charlie Kelly. It's the exact same goat.
Ah, yes, the two genders, Lindsay Weir or Charlie Kelly.
I was watching an episode of Always Sunny the other day. That's like, my friends was like, yeah, he's like, I tried wearing one of those army coats like Charlie. He's like, it didn't look good on me. And in my head, I was like, did you think it looked like Lindsay instead? Couldn't pull it off. One thing I noticed, I mean, just going right back to the very start of the episode. And I guess this is kind of the theme of the whole show, right? It's, you know, it's supposed to be about the freaks and geeks. But, you know, back in the day, like if you would have caught this live on TV, it would have just started airing. You would have had no idea what it was. And you start seeing like, oh, they're like out on the track. And then it's like the cheerleader and the football player talking about how much they love each other and this and that. And it's just like trail off from the conversation. And like, now we're under the benches with the skids.
I think so much of like my thoughts about what high school was going to be was framed around American TV, like the football players and the cheerleaders. Like, I think my high school had a football team, but like there weren't cheerleaders. It was nothing like that at all. We didn't have like a track. One like huge point of anxiety for me when I was like going from elementary to junior high, which is what we have in Canada, or what we have at least in my province, was I was terrified that we were going to have to run and jump over the hurdles, because in so many like TV shows, the like main character is like, you know, there's the pratfall of them like jumping over the hurdle and falling. And I was like, that's going to be me. And then I got to junior high and high school, and I was like, that's not a thing. That's just TV. So much like how we were scared of like quicksand and like volcano eruptions, like no hurdles.
The Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah. We did have to play dodgeball, but and maybe Gus, can you answer this? Is like matching gym uniforms a thing?
It was in elementary school, which was first through fifth, and junior high, which was sixth to eighth grade. We would wear matching uniforms. Okay. And every school had a different one. I wore a white top polo with like blue pants.
Interesting.
But they've moved away. Yeah, they've gone away from that recently. And in high school, it was no uniforms at all. But most public schools, as far as I know, they've moved away from.
And another weird thing about like gym class in TV shows was that they would always like hit the showers after gym class. But like, I don't know if like my school was just gross, but like nobody showered after gym class. Well, I didn't work up enough of a sweat to justify it, but like you would just go to your next class like sweaty, and the guys would smell like Axe and the girls would smell like any girls listening, you will know this exact scent, Hawaiian ginger. It was like the scent, the it girl scent. You would just like the locker room would just smell like that, and then you would just go to your next class. So did you guys shower after gym class?
No, we had showers in our lockers, but I don't know if they work.
You'd have to give the kids like a free period after gym.
Pretty much. But no one had time for that. So
yeah. You just go sweaty.
Yeah. I mean, just deodorant and then
Axe.
Yeah, that was that's just slather on the deodorant. And like, remember one, there was one of my friends, he would just be like soaked after gym class and then just like kind of dry off at the end of the day. It was weird. Kind of the same thing. Apparently the girls locker room had stalled showers in my high school, but the boys room was just one open room, and we definitely did not shower. Other than I can remember once it was I'm not using his name. But one day I go, it was the locker room, and it just, he was this big, tall, intimidating guy. And I could hear the shower on when I walked into the locker room. I was like, all right, change and get the fuck out of here. And then I hear the shower stop and I hear him plot out. And I just like out of the corner, I was like, oh, fuck, Bobby's naked. And then he's like trying to talk to me. And I was like, please don't. And he's like, anyway, it was just like, the fucking scared is. It's like, this is so uncomfortable. It's funny too, because you get over it, because like, not that I revel in it, but like, if I go to the pool and swim, I mean, I guess I haven't done this since COVID started, but like, if I go to the pool and swim laps, and it's like, I get back to my locker, there is like 4 seconds of nudity as I pull off my trunks and then put on underwear. And like, now it's like, I just don't give a shit. I guess I'm like, maybe that is just men just hit the point where it's like, I don't care anymore.
From what I hear about men's locker rooms, and particularly old men in men's locker rooms, that seems like it checks out.
Yeah.
There's probably like a scale, like a chart that's like level of caring and age, and it just goes down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a documentary. I can't remember the name, but it's this guy. He became like a viral video when he had proposed to his girlfriend at a basketball game and she said no. And then he's making this documentary because he's like, I came to find out afterwards that she said no because she thought I wasn't endowed enough.
Oh, and so, my like, God.
And so he does this whole documentary about like just basically the fascination with penis enlargement and things like that. And he goes as far as like going to somewhere in like Thailand or something like that. And it's like, he's about to get like injections. Yeah. And like, he's at the moment where the guy's holding the needle and it's in a hotel room. And he's like, I'm not going to do it. Like, he's like, this is all gone too far. Like, I've gone way in over my head. But part of it is like, he has a psychologist out of who is at one point. And he's like, and I think it was around this time frame, like probably around the 80s, where school stopped making kids shower after school. So like back in the day, like 50 years ago, like you would go to gym and you would change after class, and like there was just nothing about, there was no shame about nudity at all. You just got to see everyone, and then you just didn't care once it's been destigmatized. He's like, so now guys are growing up and the only other penises they see is in pornography. they think that's normal, and they're just like super self-conscious about themselves. I don't know how I got on this topic. I really went down the rabbit hole on that one. Talking about
someone's just got penises on the brain.
Phallus? I mean, phallus. Anyway, you'll see. There's a pretty great shot, pretty great episode. It's like 4 or 5 in, where the showers do become a plot point of the episode. So, yeah, it's a good one. I guess, yeah, Dodgeball, which also wasn't as violent as they made it here. But
can we go home?
Schreiber, don't be an idiot. All right, I mean, we're gonna do something fun. I'm gonna let you guys play dodgeball.
Yeah. That's not fun.
I guess we had mixed gyms class. Like, did you both have mixed gym? Like,
yeah,
boys and girls?
We did, yeah.
So mm-hmm. It wasn't like, and there wasn't like a guy who was like fucking 400 pounds drilling dodgeballs. That's like, I think it's kind of established that Alan is in their grade, but the blonde kid in the background. Like, he's in the first scene when you first meet the freaks, and later on you come to learn he's there's an episode where he's Nick's pot dealer, but I don't think he's the same age as them. So it's like, I don't know if there's like multiple grades all have gym mm-hmm. at the same time, but I think that was probably one of the most like just plays through the entire episode, and that was the thing I definitely felt the most, is just how much shorter Sam is than everyone else. And like when he's asking Cindy to the dance and he has to like look up at her, like I think I'm pretty sure my voice only deepened the summer after grade 9, and then I'm pretty sure I only went through my growth spurt the summer after grade 10. So like looking up at girls while slow dancing is just, that was my life. I feel it. And especially the part two at the dance with Come Sail Away playing. This makes me, why are we crying? Did I listen to Come Sail Away by Styx again? There's great use of that song, but there's also something like, I can't even remember what the song would have been, but like, getting the girl to come finally slow dance with you, and then by the time you get there, either the song has changed or now it's too fast to dance to, and it's just like, now what do we do? Like, I don't know about your guys' high school dances, but mine, it was never like people paired off and dancing. It was just everyone stood in a big circle.
Yeah.
Or there were several circles, and that's how people danced.
Yeah, it's, for me, it was like definitely the memes of like, you're in the bathroom and then you hear, Pisu, 8 down, down. And that's when you're like, oh, I gotta get there.
I think the one that really got people to the dance floor in my school was get your ass up in here.
Oh my God, they're gonna play Ice Cube.
There's a lot of songs that just make me think of Ice Cube.
I will say that dance was definitely like as cringy as what a real middle school dance or high school dance would be like, because like not 1 ounce of rhythm in any of those children. Like they, like it's like the director just said to them, just dance. Like it doesn't matter what you're listening to, just dance, because none of them are dancing to the song, they're just dancing.
I would wonder, like, in a lot of those cases, well, I'm pretty sure they had that built around Come Sail Away regardless. Unless, or I don't know, either that or maybe it was going to be like Stairway to Heaven or something. The only other song I could think of that maybe be like slow and then fast, but it seems like it's built around Come Sail Away and just Jeff or Mr. Rosso at this point, and Lindsay, and just, you know, the lyrics are kind of like making sense to her predicament. But I also noticed just how like, I don't even know if Jason Segel's in character as Nick or if he's just sitting on the stage, just like, because I don't even think he went to the dance and he's just sitting there giggling in the background. Super high. Just basically his entire character for the rest of the run. And that's something they do too. Like, I guess we talked about it last episode with Scrubs and using music. Like, they definitely dig into the 80s, you know, make sure that the, actually, I don't know if these songs actually had come out by 1980, between Come Sail Away and Renegade, which is used perfectly in the buildup to the fight. But there's a lot of great music is used throughout the series. And like, usually it's like, well, there's a few times at least, like there's one where they're going to a Who concert. So there's a lot of Who songs. And like, I can't imagine it would have been cheap to get the light, like going after these classic rock songs. I'm like, that shit's expensive. But one thing too, when I saw this scene, one of the things that's always stuck with me over the years is Nick and his love for Neil Peart and wanting to be a drummer. But what he's going over is his kit.
That's 14 mounted toms, 8 floor toms, 4 splashes, 2 gongs, 10 cowbells, 4 rides, 5 snares, man. A roto-tom rack. And it's all mounted on my infamous quadruple kick drum system. 6 more pieces. I got a bigger kit than Neil Peart from Rush. Yeah.
So like, I bought a used drum kit last year. And like, it cost me $300. And then everything is so fucking expensive. Like, I had to reskin the drums, and that was like another $200. And I haven't even like done all the skins yet. I bought a cymbal, and that was like $80 used. Sticks are expensive. Everything's just fucking expensive. Like, even buying it used. And so I estimated it's got like $6,000 worth of
Jesus.
Like, so much. And I didn't know what a rototom rack was, but you can't find one for under $200. And that's just for 3 toms. So if he's got 14.
Jesus.
But yeah, it's I was like, how does he afford this? So I don't know. No, I mean, that's all in. I was on Kijiji today trying to find like, how much could I get splash cymbals for? And like, yeah, $200. So I mean, that's still, you know, today's money. So like, but like relatively, I don't know if instruments were like relatively cheaper back then. I would guess not. But one thing I do know, this is another quick tangent. I had a boss years and years ago, and he had been in a band in the 60s, and he's just like, he is okay boomer to the fucking, and he was telling us one day about like, he was going on about, so I read an article that most people wouldn't survive if they missed one paycheck. And I was like, yeah, I wouldn't. Like, I got student loan payments to make. He's like, student loans? He's like, when I was going to the University of Wisconsin, we used to just play Fridays and Saturday nights at the Go-Go Club. I don't know what the fuck club was. Some bar. He's like, we play Friday and Saturday nights. And I would get $100 a session. He was the drummer in his band. He's like, I play. Tuition was $1,000. So I play 5 weekends. I have tuition covered. I was like, you motherfucker.
Yeah.
Like,
get the fuck out of here with that.
I couldn't play 10 gigs anywhere and cover a year of tuition. Like,
nuts,
the fact that he was making $100 at a bar, like, even that would be $200-$300 just for the drummer. Like, I don't know. I guess bars used to have more money for entertainment. I don't know.
Yeah, they don't anymore.
I've never listened to this guy complain about fucking anything.
Yeah.
Oh, his shit.
Houses cost like $20,000.
Are you okay?
Is it just me or does the whole world suck?
I felt relevant in this moment. Yes. Yes, Lindsay, the world sucks. Again, because I like the IMDb things. This episode was directed by Jake Kasdan. He directed 5 of the 18 episodes. This is some of his earliest work. He did some Undeclared, some New Girls, but went on to film. So he directed, he's got a fucking resume. Orange County, Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story, Bad Teacher, Sex Tape, the latest Jumanji movies. And he also wrote Walk Hard and the second new Jumanji. So a lot of work there with Jason Segel. He was in Bad Teacher and Sex Tape. This episode was written by Paul Feig, who wrote 16 of the 18 episodes. I'm sure Feig has come up on at least Comedy Night podcast right before. He was basically the kind of the unofficial guy working in the background on The Office during season 5 after Greg Daniels left. So he wrote, or he directed 15 episodes of The Office. He directed Cleveland on 30 Rock. He directed Pawnee Zoo on Parks and Rec. He did a Mad Men, 10 Nurse Jackie, 7 Arrested Developments. He wrote the movie Spy, and he wrote the movie, or the 2016 Ghostbusters. And he directed Bridesmaids, The Heat, Spy, Ghostbusters. And the only movie I could find without Melissa McCarthy, A Simple Favor, that had Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively in it. Yeah. And as we mentioned at the top, he was doing a lot more acting through the 90s. But now does a lot of work behind the camera. Also, a lot of his cameos are just in his own movies. Speaking of it wasn't 40 Old Virgin, it's Knocked Up. He's it's one of the guys playing fantasy baseball with Paul Rudd. This episode originally aired Saturday, because it aired on Saturdays, September 25th, 1999. Had 9.7 million viewers, which is like better than any episode of The Office ever got.
Wow.
But this was not considered a success. It aired up against Cops. ABC was airing the 1997 J-Lo movie Selena. And must be CBS, because I know it's, the old Kyle Chandler, Fisher Stevens drama, Early Edition, where Kyle Chandler gets a copy of tomorrow's newspaper delivered to him by a cat every day. Something else I used to watch back in the 90s.
No memory of that show, but I guess 1999.
Yeah, that's where I know Kyle Chandler from, rather than Friday Night Lights or Bloodline. And I forgot Fisher Stevens is in it. Guy keeps coming up, as we mentioned him in the Always Sunny episode a few weeks back. Overall, this episode has an 8.6 on IMDb, which is actually only the 12th out of 18 episodes. So the entire series spans between a 9.2 and an 8.3. So like, having just re-binged the series, like there are no duds. Like every episode is as good as this one is, if not even better. Like it's, I was trying to find out of kind of all the other series, if any of them, you know, have no bad episodes, basically. Now, it's kind of easy when you only do 18 episodes to have to avoid having bad ones. But on average, the episodes are at 8.7, which actually apparently only puts it at number 34 on IMDb. But I was going to look through the top 33, but I only had time and did the top five. All of them have episodes, you know, below an 8. Breaking Bad's Fly was a 7.8. The Wire season 2 premiere was a 7.8, which anyone who watches The Wire for the first time has no idea what the fuck is going on at the start of season 2. Avatar The Last Airbender is the third highest rated series. It's got like 12 episodes between a 6.9 and a 7.9. Game of Thrones would have probably finished a lot higher if it wasn't for season 8 in that one episode where Jaime and Bronn go to Dorne. Those are all pretty poorly ranked. The finale has a 4.1.
Oh my God.
Fucking generous.
Oh my God.
And then the fifth show on IMDb, the only one still currently airing, is Rick and Morty. 51 episodes to date, but there's quite a bit. There's like 11 episodes. One of the lowest ones is 5.7. So that one has some consistency issues too. But I don't know. I mean, that's something about Freaks and Geeks. Like the pilot, very strong pilot, and they basically kept it up there for the rest of the series, which I think possibly if they, you know, they knew they were on the bubble of being canceled the entire time, especially when episodes started airing out of order, and then they got preempted at some point. I think they burned off all the episodes like on a Friday night or something like that. Like, it's, you know, do you panic and tinker with your show and try to make it into something else to make it better, or do you just know that you have a great product and you just, it's like, you know what, we're just going to keep it at this, not change it, and then, you know, it'll find its audience 23 years later. I feel like they went for the artistic integrity and did the latter. But yeah, it's interesting that, yeah, it's just kind of how it went. I don't know if they were kind of expecting that. Yeah, maybe we'll find an audience as the show went on, but it never did. By the time it got canceled, it was getting 6.7 million viewers on Monday night, which was not good enough numbers for the year 2000.
So that's crazy.
I don't know, Wikipedia, it says that it was actually running up against Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, which is one of the reasons why it's being crushed. But well, what I found going through TVTango.com, which is where I get kind of, you know, what time everything aired, actually was up against King of Queens and That 70 Show a lot more. They only ever aired 12 episodes, and then they aired the last three episodes in July. And then, there were three that were never even seen. So you had to get the DVD or catch them on other channels on reruns. So you got to wonder, though, like, would it have remained, had it not been canceled, would it have the reputation it still did?
You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Mm-hmm. That indeed. Yeah, I don't know. They probably benefited, in all honesty. It gave it that reputation. And, you know, like, if it had been on for 7 years, the way a lot of these contracts work, like, imagine what that would have done to, you know, would Seth Rogen be Seth Rogen if he was still on, if he'd spent the start of his career on Freaks and Geeks rather than doing what he did instead, right? Like, it's,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, you mentioned earlier, like, Firefly, which is definitely always kind of painted in the same grouping, where it only had one season, I think like 13 episodes. I have watched Fire. I watched it a bit when it was, my dad's really into sci-fi. So we'd watch all those kind of shows, but never really was a huge fan of it, but I'm not really a huge fan.
I refuse to watch it because I don't want to be disappointed when it's over. So I'm just going to be ignorant. Blissfully ignorant.
You ever watch Firefly, Gus?
No. I've never seen it, but I know of the show. I get the same feeling with Freaks and Geeks. That's why I haven't watched it in years, because it's over and that's it with the characters. I have to imagine what happens after.
I found Paul Feig did an interview with Vanity Fair in 2012. It was like, you know, what would have happened. I won't go too much into it. Maybe don't read this all, Sam, because it has some spoilers for how the season goes.
I'll mute myself.
I'll leave it out here. Just don't read our show notes. Really, it's kind of funny because they didn't really have much of a plan for the Freaks at all. Really just kind of like sad plot line. It's like Nick probably would have ended up in the army and Ken would just be slumming around town. Daniel probably would have been gone to jail. They just didn't really have much of a plan at all for any of them. One thing he did said is he planned on keeping it going in real time. So like they would graduate, the characters would get older, and just kind of deal with things as they come along. He had more of a plan for the Geeks, which I would say is probably because that's definitely who he saw himself as. One of his plans was that Sam would probably become a drama nerd like Feig was himself. And then he had an idea that he would run for school president against Cindy, who would turn into like a Reagan era Republican. Like the two of them would butt heads over that. Neil would basically become more of a glee club nerd, and Bill, basically because Martin Starr is actually quite athletic, would basically grow into his awkwardness and become a jock. It's kind of this idea that the Geeks would actually grow into popular kids. And then they also had the idea that they wanted to turn Millie into a burnout, which I think would have been,
oh my god, that would have been great.
I would have loved to see that. Millie, I don't know. She's just one of the funnier characters just because of like how, I don't know, wide eyes of an optimist she is. And just like she's so defiantly a geek, I guess. It's like through the rest of the series, she just never understands why Lindsay's doing anything, why she would want to go to parties. Basically everything she is in this episode. But, you know, they do it. I find they do it well. And they do it well with really all the characters. Like it's pretty easy to put them all in these one-dimensional boxes, and I think part of the appeal of the show is that all the characters have a lot of depth. Like if you spend any time with them, like you learn more about Millie, you learn more about Kim, who's basically just a bully in this episode. Daniel definitely has a lot of depth to him as the series goes on. They do kind of rehash some of the same points over and over again. But yeah, it's and even the teachers, like, there's more and more with Jeff as it goes on.
Hello there.
Hello, Jeff.
Guess who's in trouble?
I love him, Jeff.
Yeah. I kind of wish I had the stoner hippie guided counselor in high school instead of the one that we did. I feel like I would have appreciated someone like Jeff. But yeah, it's I can't remember. There's one of the nerds, or one of the geeks, I guess. He doesn't show up in this episode. What's his? He's the big guy. But he
the
ends
one
up
that getting, smells.
Yeah, the guy that smells. Anyway, yeah. He kind of gets more of a role as it goes on. Even they expand on that character quite a bit. That looks good. And then Alan gets some backstory too. I kind of think, because watching it, this Colin kid who like helps them fight Alan, he shows up a few more times, but definitely not as big of a role. I think they kind of replaced him with that guy instead. But I don't know. This is exactly the way that my friends and I would talk to each other when we were in grade 9.
Oh, okay. So now, don't let Alan hit any of your pressure points, because if he does, you're not going to feel anything, but you'll drop dead in 3 days.
Oh, man, my stomach hurts.
Bill, you'll be fine.
No, it really hurts. I think I should go home. This is how Houdini died.
Oh, you should always guard your face, because if the other guy hits you in the nose, it could drive the nose bone into your brain. Then you'll release your bowels and die.
Shut up, would you?
No, he's right. There are a lot of ways to die in a fight.
I'm still convinced if you get punched in the nose, your nose, it goes into your brain, you die, right? Like that's
yeah.
Truth. That's true facts.
Sounds right. Yeah.
People were always threatened to palm strike in high school. Like I said, I hung out with a lot of weird kids. Actually, there's definitely a kid. There's a lot of guys I went to high school who were exactly like Harris.
Did it work?
He broke my tailbone, but the results were effective. He got expelled. It's a good plan.
It's a terrible plan.
Just the stringy little mustache and the long hair. And just, he's like, I like how they keep using him. He's kind of the, an oracle for information. Like, this weird guy just knows so much about everything. Yeah. Any closing thoughts, Gus? Anything else on, your pick?
Like I said, I really, really like the counselor. He's really supportive and, understands the characters, really feels for them. I don't know when it is that they were notified that the show wasn't getting a second season, but season one, I mean, the show itself really feels complete. With the 18 episode, it feels complete. I mean, yeah, you want to know where the characters are going, but there's no huge cliffhangers where everyone's shifted, I guess, as far as who they're hanging out with and decisions they made. And yeah, that's why it's so sad to watch the show and finish it, because I know it's not continuing. But with that being said, it just feels complete. It's a really good show. Like I said, there's not a lot of cliffhangers. Feels complete.
Yeah, that's.
I will circle back when I finish it. I'm excited.
It definitely is. Maybe that's.
How far along are you, Sam?
Just watched this one episode. That's it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I wanted to go in blind.
I gotcha. Going deep and. Yeah, but I'll keep watching. How do you feel about the show?
I really enjoyed rewatching it. I was rewatching it a bit with my wife, and then afterwards, she was like, I just stopped watching them with her, and she was like, yeah, I didn't really care for it in the end. Like I said, I think it's a lot of the casting is really what makes it so strong. And like, I don't know if they knew when they casted all these kids, like the talent they had, but like just their careers since then has shown how good it is. It's especially in how good, like I'd say probably the weakest actor on the show is probably, as the kid that plays Sam. He gets a little bit better as the series goes on, but he definitely has some rough points at the start. But a lot of them are already really good actors by this point, and really helps sell these characters. It does get a little bit hard to separate Nick from Marshall, and how to separating. Anytime you see anything with Ken, he's just such a dick, and it's like Seth Rogen's usually not that mean in movies. Like, yeah, it's, I don't know. And they balance it well. Something I did notice, and it would have been kind of nice if maybe they had shuffled it a bit more. Maybe they would have as the show went on, but it's basically the geeks usually play the comedy storyline, and then the freaks have kind of like a more serious things going on. So like that's how, you know, there's the drama and the comedy, and they blend it too. But yeah, some of the better episodes are when, you know, they let the younger guys be a bit more serious. Like I said, there's really not a weak episode in the bunch. Definitely brings me back to how much I hated high school for sure. And I think maybe that's why it's so well too, because it's not the pretty girl and the jock sitting on the bench, especially considering how busy Phillips went on to be Dawson's Creek, and like how that was nothing like high school at all. It's a lot more real, just how terrible it was and awkward. I think something it kind of makes me think of, I don't even know why, but I draw a lot of parallels to Big Mouth. And not even that the shows are all that similar at all, just that Big Mouth is such an unflinching look at going through puberty. And it's kind of sad that, you know, the show is so graphic and disgusting that you can't show it to kids who are actually going through that at the time. But it's just like, you know, when you're watching an episode of Big Mouth, that's like, oh yeah, I remember those days. Just how terrible it was and how much of a monster I was and how my hormones are out of control. And it's just like, you just feel it. I find, yeah, Freaks and Geeks definitely has that same, like, yeah, I remember how terrible this all was. And it's, I hate shows that gloss over it, try to make it seem like high school were the best days of our lives. Because they
were. No, they were terrible. Yeah. An extreme version of this for me would be Skins, the UK version, where it goes to similar topics of growing pains, but those kids really go through some trauma. But
yeah, I know what you're talking about. I haven't never seen it. A lot of people from Game of Thrones started out on Skins, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm. Sam, have you watched that?
A little bit of it. Just maybe just the first few seasons. It was just a little bit much.
Yeah. It's heavy topics.
Yeah. Skins walked so that Euphoria could run.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
It's another one I haven't.
Oh, it's depressing. It'll depress you.
You love a good depressing show. Yeah. I watched I May Destroy You. I watched that all in one day, and that was not a good idea.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Got it's a British show, very 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 dark themes, but it's good. I ended up watching it because I made a lot of top series of the last 20 years or something like that. It still kept showing up on lists, and like it was like high on the list too. There's only 6 or 8 episodes, like it's a mini series, but it's rough. Those British people, they like dark show. All right, well. Now, well, if that's it, if you want to reach out to the show, and as I mentioned at the top, we're still looking for our first official, actual, real email. You can email us at comedynightpodcast@gmail.com. It will get read on the air. I read my sister's messenger message. We get an email from a stranger, I will gladly read it. But you can reach us there. You could find us on Instagram at comedynightpodcast@gmail.com. Sometimes I do remember to make posts on there. The Twitter's still there at Comedy Night Pod 1, and our subreddit, reddit.com/r/ComedyNightPodRight. Probably be using those less and less and just focusing on Instagram, but those are always places you can reach us. You can also find me on my own dog's personal Instagram. It's Indy the Doodle on Instagram. Cute pictures of my puppy. Where can we find you guys on the interwebs?
You can find me at on Instagram at Sam_Thistle.
And you can find me at Primos_Primeros. And there'll be some updates coming this week. Yeah, episode and logo update very soon.
This is the part of the show where I say, Gus, you said that last time.
It's just going to be a running thing, I think.
That's a recurring joke. Gus has another podcast. Okay.
Next week.
Next week. Always next week.
Goes to another school. I have a podcast in Canada.
Well, that being said, we'll be back, I swear, in 2 weeks this time, because we're recording the episode now, so it'll actually be ready. But we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of TV Makes Sense. Getting to my second pick. Very excited for it. We're talking probably my favorite series, The Simpsons. So look forward to that. Updates will be maybe on Instagram if I remember to do it. But, you know, a lot of times I say I've left it out a lot before. But again, you know, if you're looking for the show and you like it, if you do subscribe, it's also the best way to find out when new episodes come out. So that being said, I think that's it for this week on TV Makes Sense. And I still don't have a good closing line.
Bye.
See ya.
Welcome back now. Here.
Same bat time, same bat station.
Okay, love you. Bye-bye.
This concludes our broadcast day.